Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two.
Gilmore on a big step.
Oh,
brother. Lead Toledo Artis. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann, and with me as usual, my great co-host, Rich Kraich. Rich, great to be back with you.
Yeah, I was off for a few weeks, but now I'm back, so I'm better than ever.
Better than ever, indeed, just like Eric Bischoff.
Right, yes.
I think
yes, Adam got that joke. All right, cool.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So 2% of our listeners got that joke.
That's I'm sure more than two.
Maybe. You think the crossover's more? Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to guess 10% of our listeners got that.
Okay,
you know, we'll do a survey afterward.
Yeah. Do it for a poll. Yeah, so yeah. Let us know.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, great to be back with you. And our guest today, returning back to the show, is Adam Johnson of BasketballPantheon.com. Adam, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, guys.
And so we today are going to talk about mythical dream teams of the past, the present, I guess the slightly ahead of time in the future. It is, and we're going to sort of, we each picked a year and we're going to sort of compare them, pick kind of the best players of those times, but also consider how those players would match up in mythically against the 1992 Dream Team and just suss out a little bit of basketball history that way. So Adam, you kind of had the genesis for this idea. So what, you know, what brought this to mind for you, and you know, what are your thoughts on the whole endeavor?
Yeah, with the Olympics coming up this year, I just thought about doing some sort of project where you look back and see kind of what teams could have been had we used NBA players, because this current team that is about to happen, I think in 16, is going to be absolutely loaded and will be really fun to watch. And obviously 92, people always say, throw out that this is the greatest team ever assembled thing. And I just wonder if people would have said that had we had the opportunity to bring NBA players all throughout, you know, kind of the history of the Olympics. And so I thought, what if we look back at like 60 and 64 and 68 and all those years that we weren't allowed to bring NBA players and see what that team would have been like. And we thought about maybe articles, something like that. And then we kind of decided it'd be better as a podcast form and not doing every single 4 years because it would get a little redundant. So we kind of chose every 12 years, you know, exclude the Dream Team. Obviously, we'll keep them the same and then kind of have a mythical, like, how would they match up against the Dream Team? So I guess you can talk about kind of the years we chose and things like that.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting look because, of course, you know, it's difficult to you can obviously see the players and consider their skills, but you have to consider things like you know, exactly when the game is going to be taking place, you know, the rules, the styles of play, consider, you know, matchup and so forth. So I think we did a nice job of kind of balancing a bunch of different things out. All right, so our earliest team is from 1968, and that was mine. So and I chose as the starters Oscar Robertson, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain, and Bill Russell. And, you know, I think obviously these are like probably the five players that define the decade of the 60s the best. So that's certainly part of the reason why I chose them, you know, some seniority and legendary status. I think that, you know, obviously you have the chemistry between West and Baylor. You have, you know, the ability of really any of those guys, except for Russell, you know, the ability to have them go off for like a, you know, 40 or 50 point game in the right scenario. You know, you have Oscar who can, you know, basically do everything, could also has the size and the speed to compete with the bigger guards. West, who, you know, incredible shooting, incredible defense. He can run the offense and play off ball. I'm not necessarily sure that Baylor would necessarily be the best small forward. You know, there's a couple others options that we can kind of get into. It might be a better starter, but, you know, again, you have the chemistry with West. I just think that's a great, you know, that's, you know, why break up a tandem if you don't have to. And then you have, you know, of course, Russell and Wilt. There might be an issue there with fit, and, you know, I can let you guys weigh in on that. But, you know, Russell's obviously going to provide the intense defense, and Wilt, you know, basically everything, because, you know, Wilt could pretty much do just about anything. This is during the time in which he's, you know, in addition to the great scoring, he's also, you know, become an expert passer and really efficient shooter. And I just think, you know, at the starting five, it's going to be pretty hard to beat. So, Adam, any thoughts on the starters that I chose?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a legendary starting five. And I think if you just matched it up with the 92 team, I actually think that for the starters, at least, you would have them beat, just kind of on, you know, legend status, at least. But, yeah, I like the thought of Russell playing the four, especially against...
Yeah, I was right with you.
Yeah, especially playing against that 92 team. That gives them, you know, quite a bit of versatility. And he's also not as big as maybe people think. He wasn't quite as tall. He's not like one of those behemoths as, you know, some of the other guys were. So a little more versatile than the Chamberlain for sure defensively. So, yeah, I like that. And that's those guys would match up really well with 92, I think.
The main starting lineup was Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Patrick Ewing, Magic Johnson, and Karl Malone. So just for reference for who these guys would be battling against. Although the Dream Team used a variety of starting lineups, you know, based on injuries and so forth. But I think we're basically assuming you know, ideal health for everyone. So, Rich, any thoughts on the 1968 starting lineup?
Yeah, I think I like the balance of it. Like you mentioned, Baylor at small forward might be the one thing where you maybe kind of look at, just because, you know, against, you know, the likes of like a Scottie Pippen or whatever is really tough. And that's what's always kind of tough about doing this sort of comparison deal as well, is that, and maybe I guess I could ask you guys as well, we sort of talked about some things of some ground rules here. We're saying that the 92 team is coming into this year, correct? Like, they're playing under the rules and under everything of these guys, like the 1968 team, correct?
Yeah, that I think was what we sort of agreed. I didn't build my team necessarily knowing that, but I think that works still for this team. So there's no 3-point line in 1968. That isn't introduced until 84. So, but even if there were a 3-point line, I do think that there's a decent roster here assembled that could probably do okay. I mean, not like the 1992 team had, you know, a bunch of great outside shooters. I mean, obviously, Bird and Mullen, but, you know, we'll talk more about, you know, kind of Bird's limitations later, I'm sure. But so I think, you know, they match up fine there as far as I can tell.
And I always do have a little trouble, you know, sort of comparing eras, because, like, the difference in, like, you know, nutrition and health and all that sort of stuff from 1992 to 1968, you know, it's just night and day. So I always have trouble with that direct sort of comparison. So you kind of have to use it on a context base. But, yeah, looking at your lineup sort of and sort of extrapolating it, I think it's a solid matchup with the 92 team. I mean, it's one of the better of, you know, sort of looking at the other teams that we have. I think on pure, like, legend standpoint, like Adam said, like, they're right up there with that 92 team. Absolutely.
Yeah. At this point, Baylor was 34, Russell was 34, Wilt was 32, Oscar was 29, and West was 30. I tried to make that age what they would have been at the Olympics themselves, which was actually October of 68 in Mexico City. So, the issue there, I guess, is, you know, these are some aging players, although that's relatively close to, I mean, Magic was 32, Jordan was 29, Malone was 28, Ewing was 29. So these guys are late 20s, early 30s for the most part. So with Russell and Baylor, those guys are aging. I think everyone else is, you know, is a pretty good age for comparison's sake. But yeah, any other thoughts, Adam?
Yeah, Baylor was the one that I thought, because Russell still was obviously super effective in that, you know, that 68-69 season, but Baylor was the one I thought had lost some steam at that point, and some of the injuries had taken its toll, that he might struggle with the, like, Pippen, Jordan kind of super wing types that the Dream Team had. But yeah, other than that, the team is, like, really balanced, and I think I agree with that. Even if we were using a three-point line, some of the guys with the bench would have been great.
Yeah, and Baylor, you know, in 68, he had 20, you know, he had 26, 12, 4.6 assists, 44% field goal percentage, you know, pretty strong, pretty good numbers in advanced stats. So I feel like, I mean, clearly he, after the knee injury in 65, I believe, you know, he definitely had slowed down, but he had kind of bounced back from that and, you know, did have some pretty good seasons through 70 before, you know, age and injuries caught up with him. But I mean, he's definitely, you know, this is not 62, you know, Elgin Baylor scoring 70 points and just, you know, just completely, destroying the league. So it's definitely a step down from that. I do think he has the size pretty well to match up with Pippen. He was a pretty, you know, big guy, 6'5", 225. That's his basketball reference, height and weight that I used for these. So if these might not quite be, you know, exactly right for listeners who know these off the top of their head. But so if we're a little bit off on that, we apologize. But that's, you know, we're just kind of going
blame basketball reference.
For consistent. Yeah.
Yeah.
For consistency.
Send all complaints to basketball reference.
Exactly. Yeah, the great resource basketball reference, of course, that we all love. You know, the thing about Wilt is, like, the 92 team has nobody that can deal with Wilt. Like, they really don't. Like, David Robinson, Ewing are really their only true centers. You know, they can obviously, you know, and those are the bigs they can play big with, or they can play small, I guess, you know, with Malone or maybe even Barkley at center. Christian Laettner, 6'11", although he's, you know, I think he'd played a little center in the NBA, but he was obviously the young guy, not playing that much and, you know, probably a little skinny for that role, even in international play. But yeah, I don't think any of those guys have really a good chance of handling Chamberlain, even, you know, one, even at 32.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. He would have been a monster in that game.
So, as far as the rest of the team goes, I went with, for the other guards, I went with, John Havlicek. I mean, you know, he can play off the ball. Great defense. Would make a lot of all NBA defensive teams throughout his career. Obviously, part of the great Celtics dynasty, was sort of just emerging as, you know, growing from a six man into more of a starring role for that team. And then as Russell and Sam Jones and everyone would retire, you know, that would become his team pretty quickly, along with Cowens. Then for the other guard, I went with Hal Greer over Lenny Wilkins. It was just very slightly, and I just kind of felt like, you know, we already have Oscar and West who, you know, can handle the ball handling duties and are likely going to have one of those two guys already in. And Greer can actually handle the ball too, but I think he can do off the ball better than Wilkins could. But that was a very, very, very slight, you know, edge for Greer. He played on a championship level team where Wilkins was with the Sonics, that it weren't obviously not as strong. They were an expansion team. Actually, he might have been with St. Louis still, but either way, Greer's on a stronger team. Other guys I kind of considered, but dismissed. Sam Jones, who was really great, but he was 35 at that point. I just kind of felt like he was a little bit too old, even though he was still playing pretty effectively. And I also was a little bit questionable about picking three Celtics, even though there were only 10 teams or so at this point. So picking, you know, multiple guys from a team doesn't have the same problem that it would have in different, you know, in later years, obviously. And then Dave Bing, Earl Monroe, and Walt Frazier were other guards that I considered. I actually think Frazier, like, if I, you know, I kind of tried to pick this team based on the knowledge that I would have had, like, in late 1967, 1968, whenever, you know, you actually would make the choice for this team. I tried not to use, like, knowledge of what they would do in the 70s, you know, to, as a guidepost. But I just feel like Frazier, with his size and his defensive ability, would really have fit well, pretty well here. But since I don't know that, I didn't pick him. Same, Dave Bing, Earl Monroe, they just think were too early in their careers, but, you know, would certainly have been effective options as well. So out of the guards, any thoughts, Adams, on excuse me, Adam, any thoughts on those choices?
No, I thought you were right on. Yeah, I thought Sam Jones, you're right, just a little bit too old. You kind of want guys like closer to their peak for sure, even if maybe Sam Jones at some point was a better player in his career than some of these guys, which, you know, that's even arguable anyway. But yeah, if he's like not even near his peak, I agree with that pick as well. And I think you're right with the Lenny Wilkins, Dave Bing thing, like not needing another point guard, because even Rick Barry off the bench could kind of play a point forward role too. So I think, yeah, you're spot on with those.
So Rich, what did you think about the guards?
Yeah, I like the guards. As mentioned, you know, of course, your starters are there. Havlicek, I like that as well. I mean, that's a good sort of pick. And when you come to mine, you'll see some of mine are also just guys, because I think it's as important to find like the best guy. And Havlicek obviously is one of those like really, really good guys. But I think it's just as important, especially in these sort of teams, to find those sort of glue guys or find guys that kind of fit roles a little bit better as well. Because, you know, it'd be real easy to just be like, yeah, I'll take the All-NBA first team and the All-NBA second team and just like lump them together or whatever. But I think it is important too also to find guys that sort of fit within the context of stuff, fit within, you know, sort of the team concept, because as we found, that's really been one of the big differences, you know, the last few years with a lot of the American teams as well, is that like, look, you can't just grab a bunch of really good guys and throw them together. I mean, you kind of do need some of those glue guys here and there that sort of fit. And yeah, Havlicek, I mean, that's not slight on him at all. I think he absolutely is, you know, worthy of being on there. But he stuck out to me as a guy who really fits from a good role perspective as well, like coming off the bench sort of stuff, to be a really, really good guard off the bench, I thought. You know, small forward, shooting guard off the bench.
Yeah. So moving on to the forwards, I chose, in addition to Baylor, I chose Rick Barry, Connie Hawkins, and Dave DeBuscher. And, you know, for Barry, I mean, he was he actually didn't play in the 68 season. That was when he, you know, tried to move on to the ABA and was barred from playing for a year for making that jump. Politically, that would be a little weird. But I didn't really consider that. I also didn't really consider, you know, 1968 was an Olympics where a lot of African-American athletes boycotted due to, white supremacy and segregation in the United States, and in protest of that, that was, you know, there, that's obviously the famous Olympics where with the Black Power salute and you know, and obviously a lot of that going on in the country. But again, I'm sure there were guys, you know, Oscar Baylor, Russell, Lou Alcindor, who probably, you know, wouldn't have wanted to be on the team for those reasons. But I didn't really consider the political context. I just kind of tried to pick the best team. Also, in addition to Barry, Connie Hawkins and Dave DeBuscher. For Barry, obviously, he was one of the, great scorers and slashers. Not much of a defender, but I just think he would be hard to handle on the defensive end for, you know, most of the, for most of the Team USA. I mean, you obviously have Pippen, who is, you know, an incredible defender, elite, and would, you know, make it tough on anybody. But, you know, other than that, I'm not sure, like, the forwards are necessarily the stoutest defensive players on Team USA. So, and I don't know if Mullen was necessarily on that end. Bird, you know, is 35 with back injuries and is about to retire. You know, you might see someone like Magic switching over just because of his size, and I'm not sure that would be great either. You know, another guy who, you know, had been barred from basketball, from pro basketball, up until he was signed by the ABA, Connie Hawkins. You know, just undeniable skills. You know, a guy who's able to, you know, take it to the basket, and you know, incredible athletic ability and incredible production when he played. That'd be a stretch there for that being a realistic scenario. But again, you know, with the talent, his talent was undoubtable. So I feel decently comfortable with that. And then the final choice was Dave DeBuscher. He was playing with the Pistons at the time, of course, would soon move on to the Knicks and become part of those Knicks teams. You know, great defense, great passing. Another guy who I just think would fit and know his role real well and just would be like a, you would provide stout defense and would move the ball around and would just be able to kind of do all those things. Cause you don't need another guy who can score. I mean, you got plenty of that already, right? You know, you've got kind of everything else. You need a couple of, of glue guy types, and I think, you know, DeBuscher fits that pretty well.
And Rick Barry can teach Wilt how to shoot free throws too, so that'll be
great.
There
you go. Well, they both love the underhanded, so right. Yeah.
Teach him better underhanded, though. He doesn't do the underhanded right, or something. You know?
Yeah, got to flick those wrists. That's the important thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if Barry would be like the Isaiah Thomas, like where nobody wants him on the team. I mean, I guess like Barry was more personality. I mean, I guess with Isaiah it was personality wise too, but that was like over like a much longer period of time and some real personal issues. Where I think with Barry it was just he was just kind of unlikable.
Just a red ass. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, and he's also Rick Barry's a little younger at this point. It's not maybe he's not like quite as like hardened and like annoying to everyone. So maybe he could fly. But
yeah. Yeah, he's 24 at this point. Connie Hawkins is 26. DeBuscher's 28. So this is a kind of a younger crew to supplement, you know, the older guys who are, who are the starters. I forget if I mentioned it, but Havlicek is 28 and Hal Greer is 32. So he's a little bit older too. But enough youth, I think, here that, that there's, you know, just to balance out the experience of the starting lineup.
Yeah, I like the DeBuscher pick as well. That kind of reminds me of, like, the Iguodala for the 2012 team. Just a guy can, like, play different roles. And I think he may put that in your notes, fits and knows his role. At this point, you know, when it's like the 9th, 10th, 11th guy, usually the guy's not going to be annoying to everyone on the team and just play his role. So I think that's a good pick.
Yeah, and he's another guy with some size, 6'6", 220, isn't going to get pushed around too much. I mean, he could do... he could play power forward or small forward, so I think he would fit. He definitely could defend the power forwards, I think, pretty well. But the athleticism, enough athleticism to defend the wings is a different question. That might be a little tricky. I mean, hopefully Hawkins could, you know, kind of pull that off. Not necessarily a guy who was doing. I don't know how well he was. Honestly, I don't really recall much about him defensively. The highlights I've seen don't really highlight his defense. They highlight everything else on the end of the ball, the other end of the ball. So, but I think you can kind of make it work there. And there weren't really any other serious forwards that I considered. Chet Walker is a guy, but he was another sixer. I didn't want to pick three sixers, and I thought he was well behind kind of the rest of these guys. And that was really the only other strong candidate that I had for on the wings. So moving on to the bigs, this was, I think, kind of the toughest a little bit, just because there were a lot of really good and interesting choices, and it's hard to know the fit's important here, but also just the outright talent, just kind of overrode any questions I had with fit. And the two that I picked were, Lew Alcindor, the future Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was 21 playing for the Bruins of UCLA, would have been in between his junior and senior seasons here. Was already the greatest high school player ever and on his way to the greatest college career ever. Had won two national championships and it was outstanding. The other guy would be who I ended up choosing was Willis Reed, who could play both power forward and center. Good mid-range shooter, so he could stretch the floor a little bit. And again, another guy with the size to match up with the other bigs. And I ended up picking Reed over Jerry Lucas, Zelmo Beatty, Walt Bellamy, and Nate Thurmond. I need kind of one of those two to be able to play power forward. And Beatty and Bellamy didn't really do that throughout their career. I thought Thurmond just didn't really have the I feel like you need a little bit of outside shooting, and Thurmond didn't really provide that. And I just kind of felt like Reed was a slightly better choice than Lucas, probably better defensively, and probably just really better all around. So, and another guy who I think could fit alongside really any of the other three centers, you know, Wilt, Russell, or Alcindor, who I would guess, being the youngest player, wouldn't play all that much, although just with his talent, I think could, obviously one of the greatest players of all time. And even at 21 was about to join the league in a year and be pretty dominant as a rookie. So I would imagine he would not be significant worse, you know, just a year before that.
Yeah, I agree. I especially with the centers, the other guys just aren't at the standard that the four that you picked are at. Having Lew Alcindor, Bill Russell, and Will Chamberlain on the same team is just not fair. Even if it is a college Lou Alcindor, it doesn't really matter. He's still one of the greatest, you know, players, even at that point ever. Yeah, I mean, absolutely loaded at that position. So, yeah, I can't argue with any of those.
Yeah, same with me. I'm exactly the same as Adam. It's hard to. Yeah, that's a tough little unit there. Yeah, that's.
That's fun. I mean, the only thing that I thought that is getting all the minutes for the centers. I mean, that, you know, you're gonna kind of you might run into some. You know, I don't know how well Chamberlain and Russell playing together for a lot is gonna work, or Alcindor or Russell, or Alcindor or Chamberlain. I mean, I think you could make it work. I think the talent is just good enough. I mean, Alcindor as a young player could run, you know, was very fast and could run across the floor and could probably, you know, defend, you know, power forwards if need be. I mean, just certainly has the size. And I think with some of the quickness, I think he could probably do fine against some of the wings, but that's a small issue that, I would worry about a little bit, but yeah, I mean, obviously I picked, yeah, I think the talent wins out there. So as far as making that choice.
Certainly.
All right. Well, should we move on to 1980 then?
Let's do it. Yep.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right.
That is my team. Unfortunately, the United States boycotted that year in the Olympics, so I don't have a team, so I'm done. So let's move on to Adam. So we decided, nope, Soviets, we're not going to have a team. So no, but I give my team here. This is the 1980 season as well. A little bit, it's an odd sort of NBA at this point because, of course, you know, there's two rookies here that are going to be on my team that are big, you know, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. So it's sort of, for me, it was kind of tough to not think of a lot of these guys as like what they would do, you know, in the rest of the 80s or what they would do in the rest of the decade, but think a little bit more of, you know, what they did in the 70s. It's kind of tough. You see 1980 and you kind of think, but, you know, you got to think of these, some of these guys more as these late 70s, because not knowing, you know, what's going to happen in the past or in the future rather. So my starting lineup, I did go with Magic Johnson at point guard, though. Obviously, from a talent standpoint, you know, you have obviously a transcendent star. Even at that point, he was still that level of just a cultural star as well as an actual good basketball player, too. So I thought he was just kind of a no-brainer for me to start at point guard. Shooting guard is a 27-year-old George Gervin, which is just a lot of scoring there. And that's going to kind of be the theme, unfortunately, of my team is they score, but, man, they don't really defend all that much. But that's kind of the 70s and 80s in a nutshell, in a sense. Small forward, I got another guy who, you know, he's 29 at this point, but still Julius Erving still had, you know, many, many good years to give. And another guy that I think from a sort of a fame standpoint as well, that you almost kind of have to have on your Olympic team and almost have to have as kind of a featured guy would be there. As far as my my bigs, I did similar to what Jason did in the sense that, you know, I have power forward guys that I think would fit pretty well, but I thought this unit would just be too hard to sort of pass up, or at least too silly not to pass up, and it'd be Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Moses Malone as my bigs. You know, Kareem is 32 at this point, you know, probably, you know, arguably done with his sort of peak, but still, you know, many, many good years ahead of him. And then Moses Malone at 24 was just sort of entering what we would consider sort of Moses' peak. So I thought those were two really good starters. And I'm not sure. I'd probably put Moses at the four and then Kareem at the five. But, yeah, that's kind of my starting lineup. The Magic one seems a little weird just because he's 20. But I kind of feel like I had to put Magic Johnson. I have to start him, you know?
Yeah, you know, I'm honestly not sure, like, looking at sort of the top point guards of the time.
Nobody really jumps. Yeah,
I mean, you know, Dennis Johnson, who kind of was both shooting guard and point guard.
And I have him off my bench as well. Dennis Johnson was the guy I definitely wanted to get in, mostly for defensive purposes, because, you know, he's still a Sonic at this point, but, you know, was regarded as one of the better defenders in the league. And obviously with that starting lineup, I got to need somebody that can play defense. So and with my bench as well. So, yeah, DJ was a guy I definitely added and could, you know, fill in that point guard role off the bench for sure.
Yeah, and
I have another sleeper point guard too. So.
Yeah, you know, there's maybe a Gus Williams or a Michael Richardson, you know, would be kind of be other options, you know, you might consider. But yeah, I mean, but honestly, yeah, neither one of those guys I think really, you know, would have qualified for it. Maybe Gus Williams, but yeah, I mean, of those choices, I mean, I do think Magic, even though, like, I don't think Magic is quite, he's, I mean. Yeah, maybe he didn't quite have – he wouldn't have the individual brains that he would later grow into. But, I mean, he did lead the 80 Lakers into a championship and had, you know, game six for the ages. So that says something.
Yeah, And from a fame standpoint, too. I mean, that's also part of it as well. Is you know, we sort of know the Olympics as well. You know, winning is a big part, but it's also having, you know, marketable stars on that team as well. It was a big, big deal, you know, in the post-2004 Olympic era. So I thought that he was one that just almost had to get there for reasons like that. And Larry Bird, I have coming off the bench as well for the exact same reason. That you know, obviously he's still a very good player at that point, you know, fantastic player, you know, but he's coming out of college as a star, you know, from Indiana State. And just, again, a guy that you sort of, from a marketing and PR sort of standpoint, a guy you kind of have to have on your team.
Yeah, I like Magic starting. I mean, like, you can't really argue with that. And I agree with that, it being kind of a weird time just for like basketball in general. Like, the college scene is obviously massive at this point, and the NBA scene is still kind of that like weird period. Magic and Bird haven't quite saved it yet. It's still very much like the cocaine and, like, you know, kind of weird, you know, images of the white fan, like, not being able to get into it. Like, so it's a tough, and even the talent level is not quite at the peak of where it would be maybe in the mid 80s or, you know, even like today. So what it's like, yeah, what direction do you really go in? Like, the 84 team, I feel like would have been much easier and probably even better, but
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, when you took 80, I was like, man, that's going to be kind of a tough thing to balance out. So, but yeah, in the end, I mean, that starting lineup is awesome. So, like, it's not like, you know, there's a lack of, you know, great players still, but
Yeah,
it kind of falls off in my bench, and I'll kind of go with the guards and who I had. So, of course, I had Gervin starting. I had Paul Westphal coming off the bench, and at this point, you know, he's 29 years old, and the regression was coming for him after this. But at this point, he had been just a fantastic player, great scorer, first team All-NBA in the 1980 season. You know, injuries would, of course, rob him in those last few years. But, you know, I think for this team, he'd be a great option off the bench as a scorer. Another guy that I added, I mentioned, Dennis Johnson. He broke out in 1980. His final year with Seattle, you know, 19 points per game, 4.1 assists. Also made the all-defensive team that year as well. So he was kind of a no-brainer for me, because I think one of the big things with this team is lacking is defense. So I think we're just going to blitz. We're going to try to blitz the 92 team, which I'm sure will go real well. But an interesting guard, you know, I mentioned Magic Johnson, an interesting point guard that I thought of, and I was kind of looking through the list and going, yeah, man, I got enough scoring on this team. I don't know if I need more of that. I went with Kevin Porter. You know, he's 29 at this point. He broke out huge with Detroit the year prior, 15 points per game, 13.4 assists per game. So I kind of thought there was a good need on this team, you know, especially of just kind of a selfless point guard that just, you know, didn't really necessarily care about scoring all that much, more about just kind of distributing, getting the ball to the others. Because as I go through my forwards and my centers, you'll see that, you know, there's only one ball, and a lot of these guys want to put the ball in the bucket. So it's I thought that was a good option as well, the Detroit of give a little bit of balance to the team and not just have, you know, strictly guys that want to score.
Yeah, it's tough because there are the mix of guards in the NBA is really interesting at this point. And there's not mm-hmm. like there's not quite the, you know, that crop of point guards that is going to come up and really, you know, be incredible in the 80s. You know, Isaiah, John Stockton, you know, a few years later, you know, those guys aren't quite in the league yet. So so you can't really kind of fit those guys. And, you know, Kevin Porter doesn't quite fit the star power. You know, he certainly isn't like a legendary player. I mean, he was good for a while. But you're right. It is sort of a, you know, the options there are mixed, I guess, is the best way
The other three I was sort of looking at, and it goes to Abba's point a little bit about the, you know, the kind of the cocaine 70s is, you know, there's David Thompson's a guy who you would think, you know, hey, oh, there's David Thompson, he was good, but at this point, you know, 1980, the substance abuse and the injuries, it basically just kind of rendered him, you know, he'd be out of the league, I think, in another year or so. Didn't really work for that. Gus Williams, as you mentioned, was one that I definitely considered. At that point, he was a real good, you know, scoring point guard, again, not as much of a you know, pure passer as we sort of think of point guards, you know, modern point guards, but a good scorer at this point and stuff. And then Calvin Murthy was another one as well, but, you know, he's 31 at this point, and I, in my mind, had probably regressed a little bit prior to this to be not really worthy of a bit on the Olympic team. So, you know, my guards, I like the balance a little bit, but the bench sort of falls off a little bit in terms of some things. But it's a very odd period, like you said, for the guards.
Yeah, I guess Phil Ford might be the other one of the Kings, you know, would be, might have been a
yeah,
guy
oh, yeah,
who
yeah.
you would, you mm-hmm. know, might throw in there as well. But yeah, honestly, I don't know. I don't have the best sense of how, if whether he would have been a better choice than Porter or not, or Westfall. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a good, I think that's a good selection based on the options at the time. I feel like the forwards are a much stronger crop than the,
oh, yeah.
Than the guards are,
no question.
Know, for this team. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, we brought that up, you know, I had Julius Erving starting, which of course drags, you know, Larry Bird to the bench, you know, 23-year-old Larry Bird, who's a rookie at this point. But, yeah, again, that's just, you know, a great scorer, great shooter, especially if, you know, cause we're bringing this to the 80, so there's not going to have the three-point line, but if you were going to have a three-point line, you know, obviously Larry Bird would be another pretty decent asset as well. But also, as I mentioned, from just kind of a cultural standpoint as well, you know, sort of having him on the team would almost be a necessity, especially with, you know, the NBA being what it was at this period, like Adam mentioned, and what, you know, college basketball was at this time. You know, no brainer that you put Larry Bird on here. Adrian Dantley, I had a guy coming off the bench for me. I guess he could probably be the Isaiah Thomas factor where everybody hates him, but I think he's 23 at this point, so I don't know if everybody hated him quite yet. He had already been sent off from the Lakers. This was his Jazz year. But yeah, it's hard to argue with what he could, you know, output scoring wise. You know, 28 points per game with Utah, and start, you know, and obviously start becoming a much larger role with the Jazz team than, you know, he had with the Lakers prior. So he was one that I definitely wanted to put on there. Elvin Hayes, you know, he's 34 by this point, and he had been regressing a little bit, but it's kind of hard at this point to find a really, you know, much better power forward option than Elvin Hayes. And he had made the All-Star game in pretty much, I think it was every single year prior to this year. You know, his regression would come exactly after the 1980 season. So, you know, from the standpoint of picking this team as, hey, what's going on in the last, you know, decade or whatever, what's going on in the last 5 years, Elvin Hayes would be kind of a no-brainer. I mean, we sort of know with hindsight, you know, he'd regress quick after this. But, you know, before that, he was a super reliable option, great option on my mind. And then the last but not least for forwards, I grabbed old Rick Barry. I said, my reasoning was, may as well try out the old farts. So, yeah, good three-point shooter at this point, you know, if you were going to play the three-point line. But otherwise, you know, a good point forward as well. He'd sort of stopped becoming just the crazy scorer that we sort of knew him in his youth and become more of a distributor and more of kind of an all-around player in his last few years. This is his Houston Rockets era as well. So, yeah, he seemed like a good option here. Again, another one that you sort of put on for star power as well, but I think he'd be a good option as well, you know, his even if at his slightly advanced age. But, yeah, I was happy with my forwards for sure.
Yeah, no, it's a heck of a crop there. I actually like the addition of Rick Barry. I mean, a little different than, like, maybe Kidd in 08 because, like you said, Rick Barry maybe not the greatest mentor in the world, but but yeah, it's a good pick. I mean, he's probably what, your 10th man. It's not like he's going to play
exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you're going to leave most of the small forward roles to Julius and Larry Bird. So, yeah, the one thing, just looking at the team now and like the starters, the matchup with 92 actually isn't that bad. I mean, this is probably the 1980 is probably the team that has the least amount of talent to choose from. So I like the team overall, but and this is a problem I guess with anybody, but George Gervin trying to guard Michael Jordan would be...
Yeah, oh no, yeah, that's not going to go well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough. But yeah. My goal is that George just scores every time down court, too. So we hopefully do that, but that's probably not going to work either. So, damn you, Michael Jordan.
Yeah. So, so who do we think was better, 1980 Magic or 1992 Magic?
Wow. That's a tough question.
Because I think 1980 Bird was clearly the better player. There's no question about that.
Oh,
but Magic, 1980, 1992, I don't know about that's... that.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think my first instinct would say 1980, but, you know, he'd become just such a smarter player by 92, you know, even if physically he wasn't quite there. I don't know. That's tough. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll probably say 80. 92, because 91, obviously, he was incredible. Led the Lakers to the finals, and then, of course, the unfortunate announcement. But, yeah, I what's stuck in your mind looking at 20-year-old Magic is just the finals game he had just had. I mean, his last NBA game that we saw before.
Exactly, yeah.
For this you know, mythical Olympics would have been, you know, just a legendary performance. So it's hard to go away from that 1980 guy. But
yeah,
I don't know. That's a tough question.
Yeah. Yeah. The only guys who the guy who I do think should be on this team who didn't get on there is Marcus Johnson from the Bucks. But I probably put him in for Barry maybe, but or maybe Dantley.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's kind of a guy who could kind of do a lot of things and would maybe have more versatility than Dantley, who's more of just kind of a scorer.
Right.
Or Barry, who was older. But the other guy maybe Dan Rounfield of the Hawks.
Yeah, he was a late cut. He was a late cut.
Yeah, who would
sure.
be like a strong power forward type. But yeah, I mean, I think I get why Hayes and Barry have a better, stronger star power For sure. And you talk about kind of getting a little bit of the seniority on there. And I think those guys would probably have been good for that, although especially with Barry being at the end of his career, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I think, like I said, I'm not sure. I think you assembled about as strong of a team as you could, but I think this of the teams that we have kind of here, I think this one might have the least chance of beating the 92 team.
Yeah. Yeah. And my centers, of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was a no brainer, you know, in 1980. And then as I mentioned, Moses Malone was another that I decided to put in there. 24-year-old Moses. I just thought the big body would be pretty, a great matchup at that point. And, you know, you could make a case for a few other guys that I put in as centers. I had Dan Issel as a potential one, but you know, he's 31 at this point and started his regression a little bit. Artis Gilmore, he was 30 at this point and had really just started to regress, you know, away from sort of his ABA peak. Bob Lanier, you know, he's another one as well. But, you know, with him, this is the year he was traded to Milwaukee, the year, you know, and really just started, his career just started tailing off real quick after, you know, he left Detroit. And then Wes Unseld, who was just at this point just really, really too old and just wouldn't have made sense. You know, from a star power, maybe you could make a case for him, but yeah, from a pure like talent standpoint, I mean, Unseld at this point he'd seen much, much better days. So I thought those were the two, you know, best options at center, with Kareem being obviously a tough matchup, and I think Moses being a tough matchup as well. But overall, I don't know. I mean, when I was done with my team and sort of thinking of everybody that could, I don't think they stand a chance against the 92 team. But it's just a weird era of the NBA. It's hard to get a handle on, you know, what, like you said, there's so many weird changing of guards and weird changing of evolving positions as well, as I think is an important thing, is you still have a bunch of centers and forwards, or power forwards rather, that are still really good, and no real point guards, and you know, the shooting guards still a little tough as well. So it's a very interesting team for sure. It's just it'd be a bizarre bunch to watch them kind of walk out there. It's like these just people that don't seem like they match up at all, like Kareem and you know, George Gervin, and it's just, I don't know, it'd be a very odd mix of people, but gotta do what you gotta do in the 80s. So
yeah, probably fun to watch still, though.
Oh, yeah.
So, Adam, are you ready for 2004?
Yeah, let's do it. Obviously, so 2004, there was an Olympics, and the USA won the bronze, rather embarrassingly. Took kind of a weird team. And just for context, I'm going to read kind of what that team actually was that went to 2004 and went 5-3 in that competition. This is the actual roster. Carmelo Anthony, Carlos Boozer, Tim Duncan, Allen Iverson, LeBron James, Richard Jefferson, Stephon Marbury, Sean Marion, Lamar Odom, Emeka Okafor, Amari Stoudemire, and Dwayne Wade. Some just kind of very odd pieces in that mix. Yeah. So many of the guys at this point, I guess playing for Team USA just kind of wasn't cool then, and a lot of guys backed out just due to fatigue is what they cited. Three guys backed out because they said they were getting married that summer, and then there's a couple injuries. So Kobe was starting his trial with the unfortunate Colorado incident. It was kind of a weird group to choose from based on what we had at the time, but it seemed like Team USA just kind of threw the team together and then it just kind of blew up. Larry Brown was the coach. Iverson kind of wasn't a great leader, and Duncan, it just seemed like, was kind of left out to dry there. But what I ended up doing was I did not choose the players that were injured, but everyone else I left eligible. So the players that were injured that I just did not choose were Jason Kidd, Chris Webber, and Elton Brand. They just were not eligible. Kidd would have been my starter, no question, point guard. Would have loved to have him on that team, but I'm going to kind of stick to semi-realism and not choose him. So my starting lineup in the end ended up being Chauncey Billups, Kobe Bryant, Tracy McGrady, Kevin Garnett, and Shaquille O'Neal. So what are your guys' kind of first impressions on that starting lineup?
It's definitely, I mean, well-balanced. I mean, you're going to have some really good defense, particularly at three of those positions, and obviously Shaq is going to be impossible to handle. And you're at McGrady's peak pretty much. Athletically, scoring-wise, I mean, he's coming off, that 03 season where he was just incredible, had one of the great individual seasons of all time, and, proven earlier in his career that he could kind of be a do-everything type player. Kobe that way, honestly, too. So I'm assuming that would have all melded well and not really been a problem and not really, you know, gone into like a, you know, who needs to be the alpha dog type of thing. Obviously, if this was real life, you would have the Kobe Shaq bad feelings that would derail that, but we're right. I think we're willing to, you know, put that aside for just for the purposes of this. But yeah, I mean, that's a really strong starting five. I like Billups as a guard there. I mean, he's good enough distributor, great defender, can play off the ball and make open shots too. So
I wonder, the only thing I wonder about the Billups thing, and I think it's a great pick as well, but I wonder, you know, sort of selling that to the public, because at this point, of course, Billups had won, you know, the championship with Detroit, but I don't know, would you consider him established enough where if they said, hey, Chauncey Billups is the starting point guard of your, you know, USA Olympic team, would people be okay with that, or would they kind of, and not that matters, of course, but I just mean, like, from a PR standpoint, you know, I think people in the basketball knew how good he was, but I'm just trying to take myself back to 2004. I don't remember if he was considered like, oh wow, this guy's really, really awesome at this point. Or
yeah, I think if not for them just winning the championship, I think you'd absolutely have a point. I think people would be like, wait, what is going on? Like, he's the point guard when there's so many,
like, that's that Denver Nuggets flameout guy, right? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, he had one lucky year. Like, I don't know if I'm trying to remember back in 2004 if it was like, oh, Billups is, you know, because I know later, you know, we'd found, you know, in my mind, Billups started getting a lot more respect as they continued to just build and build and continue to make those Eastern Finals or whatever. And people realize, oh my God, Chauncey Billups isn't, you know, a really, really great point guard, and honestly one of the stars of that team, whereas I don't know if that year he necessarily was. I don't know. I don't remember in 2004, but yeah, I just wonder from that, from a PR standpoint. Not that, I mean, that's a great pick from a basketball standpoint, but I'm always curious about sort of selling the Olympic team to the public as well.
Yeah, I think super the fact important. That he just got the finals MVP is like really the only
exactly, yeah,
grace in that sense. But yeah, I think, yeah, basketball wise, to me, it was like, it was very easy to choose him as a starter.
Oh yeah,
no brainer. Like I said, Kidd would have been if not for the injuries. But yeah, so I was only Chauncey in the end, so that was kind of the thinking there. But yeah, Jason, I know you're a big Chauncey fan, so I know you're probably happy with that one.
Yeah, I think he's coming off of a finals MVP. I think that wouldn't really have been a peer issue. Now again, this team, you know, realistically would have been chosen sometime in 2003, so, you know, is that choice going to be made then? I mean, he had already played well for the Pistons and led them to some, you know, playoff runs and was certainly establishing himself, but yeah, was he really, you know, at the tippy-toppy, you know, part of point guards at that point? Maybe not. But I'm certainly willing to go with it.
Cool. So, yeah, I'll just kind of read the bench first. Or I guess we'll go guards first off the bench. And this is the one that's going to probably be the most controversial that I did. I ended up going with Baron Davis as the backup point guard, which is probably sounds crazy to some people to not have Allen Iverson even on the roster, because at the time, Iverson was great. But I think the way that 2014 played out and kind of the lack of leadership that Iverson had, and in my mind, for Iverson, I mean, growing up, I loved him. He was one of my favorite players. You know, I had a jersey of him, and he was great. But he really needed a team built around him to be super successful. So at this level, you don't need that. I mean, the players are great. Like, that person coming off the bench just needs to be able to fill in different roles. And I think Baron Davis would have been a little bit better about that. Plus, I think Baron Davis would have been thrilled to be on the team. Would have added chemistry to the team. Is a likable guy. Seems like he gets along with everybody. So, in that sense, I think Baron Davis is a better pick for this sort of team. I mean, is Allen Iverson a better player? No doubt. But I thought for this team, I thought Baron Davis made more sense. And so the other guards I had, so he was the only, you know, true point guard off the bench. The other kind of guards I have are Vince Carter and Ray Allen. So what do you guys think of those selections?
I definitely see your your reasons for picking Baron. I feel like he is a little bit of a gunner still, although with the other stuff, I agree. The nice thing for him is that he can actually shoot a three-pointer where Iverson really couldn't, and, you know, so he can kind of work off the ball a little bit. I mean, I don't know if there's a great other choice. I mean, the other guys who, talent-wise, you would kind of consider there would be Iverson and Marbury, but both those guys, you know, come with baggage. Steve Francis, another guy who
he's good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Francis, but at that point, actually was still like an effective, productive player. Whether he was how
right.
good he was is another question.
Right.
You know, maybe you could throw in somebody like Sam Cassell. You know, kind of that steady old veteran presence. You know, they had just come off that conference finals, so he was kind of at a. He would have been a little bit of an unusual choice, but he was definitely like a guy people respected, even though he was definitely had been a bit of a journeyman. But he had good success in Milwaukee and even before that. So he's a guy who I, you know, maybe you can throw in there as a possibility. But Yeah, it is definitely a it's definitely a league of flawed guards, and at least flawed point guards. Yeah, Allen and Carter, those guys seem right. I don't really see there's no one who I can immediately think of who I think would be better than
I agree.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think yeah, and Barry Davis is a bit of a gunner, and but I think the point you made right after that was the 3-point shooting is just significantly better than Allen Iverson, so that's kind of why I had it, and I think he's probably a better team defender as well, so that kind of was the ultimate deciding factor.
He had more size too. That's, you know,
right.
It's helpful to a degree. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a kind of personality management as well. So that was that thinking there. But the forwards off the bench, kind of wing forwards, would be Paul Pierce and Sean Marion. And then the bigs, the kind of last like forward slash centers, would be Rasheed Wallace and Tim Duncan. Obviously, Duncan was going to make it. I mean, he was very close to starting. The only reason I didn't start him over KG, KG had just won MVP.
Yeah, it just felt PKG for sure. Yeah,
yeah, it just felt like it's been KG at that point. So, so that kind of rounds out the rest of the roster. So, I guess for the bench in full would be Tim Duncan, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, Sean Marion, Baron Davis, Vince Carter, and Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah, I like the team a lot. I mean, obviously, the weak point is just going to be that point guard position. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, the guards, I think, are good, well-balanced as well. And I think having Rasheed in there as well would really help the power forward spot as well. Because if I remember, I mean, I know, you know, that 2014 was just space thing was just such an issue for that team, because they just had nobody that could really space the floor, nobody that could really shoot without the ball. You know what I mean? Like, everybody had to be like these ball dominant, at least all the guards and forwards or whatever had to be pretty ball dominant, you know, scorers, and that just hurt it a lot. But I think this team, there's a lot of guys who can work off ball, and a lot of guys, I really do like this team, and I think it's, you know, leaps and bounds better, just better fit than what the actual 2014 was. You know, provided everybody decided to show up and not take it off. But I really do like this team a lot.
The only problem I have with this team is LeBron's not on it, and I just kind of feel like, I mean, part of the reason why that 2004 team didn't succeed real well is because Wade, LeBron, and Carmelo got very little. You know, they were the second year players or whatever. They were kind of buried on the bench, and it was kind of their place in the hierarchy at the time. And LeBron, obviously, you know, even though he was very good, was not the player that he developed into. But, you know, if you were willing, you know, if you kind of, you know, slid the least talented player off this team, who I would probably argue was Baron Davis, you put LeBron in there, and then you kind of let, you know, Kobe and McGrady and LeBron kind of handle the point guard ball handling duties. Like, is that enough? Do you need Davis on there? You know, do you think that that's enough guard play there, where you can kind of go without, you know, an actual backup point guard? Or I don't know. Other than that, maybe I would place him. I guess the other guy would probably be either Marion or Rasheed. I like Marion's defensive versatility a lot. Rasheed can space the floor, which is better, which is helpful. So can also and can play a little bigger than Marion can. So, although I don't know, I guess in international play, Marion might have some, might be able to play bigger. I mean, he obviously did eventually in the NBA. So, that's a tough one. Other than that, I think, these are really good choices. I like that, Garnett, Duncan and Shaq, you know, any combination of those three guys can play together and play together effectively, I think.
Yeah, and there's even if you wanted to go super big against the Dream Team, you could move KG to small forward. At that time, KG was so mobile that you could move him. I mean, the spacing would be a little odd, but I mean, the spacing was kind of odd in the Dream Team every once in a while, because there wasn't that many just knockdown 3-point shooters. So,
sure.
I mean, you could kind of throw out some funky lineups with those three. But yeah, I mean, those three are awesome. I mean, that'd be an incredible kind of triumvirate to have. And my thinking on the three young guys was, at that time, really, Carmelo Anthony, but LeBron won Rookie of the Year in 2004. I actually thought Carmelo Anthony probably had a better season than LeBron that year. And Dwayne Wade had just actually come off a nice playoff run where he was actually kind of playing in real games. And at that time, they're all kind of even in my mind. And so I kind of went with a route of, like, I'm either taking all three or none of them. And, I mean, talent-wise, no question, LeBron James over Baron Davis or even Sean Marion. But the fit at that point, and there's also some kind of articles you can find and kind of back – rumor stuff that LeBron was a bit of an issue on that team, the kind of the ego. It was a little too inflated at that point. He hadn't become the kind of all-around, like, great team guy yet. So I was a little worried about that, and I think that I mean, obviously Marbury and Iverson were his examples on that team, so maybe that's not the greatest. You know, if he's got maybe you know, some other, and Duncan there, maybe that could help. But yeah, I kind of went with a all or nothing on those guys. And so yeah, let me go through kind of the other guys real quick that I considered that ended up not taking. Obviously Iverson. I considered Michael Redd, but I thought he was a little redundant to Ray Allen, so didn't really need him. Ron Artest, just a little too volatile for me. But
yeah.
Like, I don't know if I want Ron Artest representing my country. So then Ben Wallace just can't do anything but defend. It just would have been not versatile enough. I thought Rashid was a better pick. I think Rashid would be a monster in international play.
Oh, yeah.
Sam Cassell, I was actually very close to going with the backup point guard. And again, Kidd would change the whole thing. Kidd would start, shove Chauncey to the bench, and then Baron Davis wouldn't even be an issue. But yeah, I was very close to going Sam Cassell for just like the leadership side. But he was 34 at the time. I just don't think he'd be able to offer a ton, you know, in the actual games. Jermaine O'Neal considered pretty strongly, but ended up going with Rashid in the end. Marbury, I thought about for about 4 seconds. Carlos Boozer, again, thought about for 5 seconds. And Brad Miller, actually, I gave a little more consideration than you might think, just because of the range he could extend out. Would have been a good, you know, good fit, good team defender. Wouldn't have really cared if he played very much. So give him some thought. But yeah, I'm pretty satisfied with the team that I ended up with.
You know, I definitely think there's enough talent there to give the dream team a whirl. The guard play, well, I guess the point guard play. But again, Davis is probably going to be the last guy in your rotation, and the other guards, you know, they're going to compete. I mean, Kobe could defend then. I mean, when he was locked in, absolutely. You know, Billups is a great defender too. So they're going to make life hard for the guards. Obviously Magic's so much bigger than everyone at point guard it's going to be kind of a tough matchup for anyone. But I think the extra big lineup that you talked about, you know, with Garnett shifting to the three, that's a really interesting idea. I don't know exactly how that would work, but Garnett's roughly the size, he's taller, but he's, you know, not that different size wise than Larry Bird or Mullen. So that actually probably would work. He was certainly more mobile than either of those guys at the time. I'm kind of trying to picture that in my head, and I find that intriguing.
Yeah, I think, and you could shift maybe at that point, just shift McGrady and Kobe up as well, and so you could have Kobe and McGrady kind of switching off as like the proverbial one and two, and then you go KG, Duncan, and Shaq. And yeah, that's a lineup. I mean, at the time, obviously, like in 2004. Those international teams would have had a lot of trouble with, and then even 92, that team. And again, remember, this is, you know, the 92 team is coming to 2004. So we are playing with a 3-point line and, you know, rules like that. So, I think that team would, that five would give that dream team a lot of trouble.
Yeah. All right. Should we move on to 2016?
Yes. And 2016, was Braden, the guy who runs the site with me. That was his team. He unfortunately could not appear on the podcast tonight. Had a lot going on. So, he just told me to kind of read out his team, his starters, and then a few notes that he gave me.
So we'll talk crap about him and then he won't even know. So we'll just tell his team sucks. I'm just going to say that right now. I didn't.
Yeah. It's fine. He told me, he actually had quite a bit of trouble with some of the last few spots. I mean, there's a few kind of givens. And then, I mean, this is a period, I think, that we're seeing, you know, certainly, Rich, with your team, a little bit of a lack of talent pool. 2016 is a huge talent pool. And there's a lot of guys that are left off that would make a great second team. So he ended up going with the starting lineup, Steph Curry, James Harden, LeBron James at the four, Kevin Durant, and Anthony Davis playing the center role. What do you guys think of that lineup?
That seems about perfect to me. I mean, you've got shooting, you've got rim protection, you've got you've got passing, you've got everything. I guess Harden, the only weakness that I kind of see there is his lack of defense. Though, you know, he's shown that when he's engaged, he's he does well, and
right.
So I'm sure that's fine. I mean, there's not really the one position where there's a little bit of a shortage of talent these days is shooting guard in the NBA. So I certainly don't see a better option than he. But that'd be the kind of the first. That'd be the only like small thing that I might question with that.
Yeah, my thing might just be at least an. And I think Harden's a great choice, and I think I love the lineup as well. But it might just be an issue of too many guys that kind of need the ball in their hands at all times to be, you know, super effective. Or I think Steph Curry would be fine. I think he can, of course, you know, he's great, you know, at passing, but he's also great at, you know, working off the ball and getting free from screens. Harden, you know what, but I wonder if, you know, in this sort of atmosphere, he might be more inclined to sort of pass it around a little bit. But you know what I mean? Like, we sort of take him for granted of what he is in Houston, where he kind of needs to do just about everything on that team. Whereas, you know, maybe in this, he becomes a little bit more of a facilitator in some way. And LeBron, of course, we know that he'd be fine in that role. And Durant's kind of another one as well, where I just wonder, because a lot of these guys, I mean, those four guys are all sort of very ball-heavy sort of guys, but I think they could make it work. I think they would make it work, absolutely. I think especially Curry and LeBron, I think, would relish that chance to just be, you know, real good facilitators and sort of work out from that perspective. But, yeah, Davis as a center, too, I think that he's a real good fit for that as well, just a great, great rim protector.
Yeah, and the specific matchup of the 92 team, I mean, I think, you know, we forget – like, LeBron is Karl Malone's size, so it's like you.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you would have, like, no real issue guarding Karl Malone or Charles Barkley. And LeBron's got about 3 inches on Charles Barkley. So, yeah, I think him playing at the four is not an issue at all in my mind. And a side pick and roll with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant is just incredible.
Oh, yeah, that's sick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a heck of a lineup. And yeah, Harden, that's true. The defense is rough, but there's guys off the bench that you could put in, you know, in a pinch for defense if you need to. So, including Kawhi Leonard, which is kind of the first guy he would take off the bench in that rotation. And then he also has Klay Thompson, Chris Paul, Andre Drummond, Carmelo Anthony, and DeMarcus Cousins. So, what do you guys think of that bench unit?
Did you mention Westbrook or
yes?
You mentioned Westbrook, yeah. I definitely think Westbrook and Paul and Kawhi are absolute, you know, locks for sure. Then the one guy I really want to get on here is Draymond.
Me too.
Yeah, I would almost take Clay. I would almost take Clay off and put Draymond or even a guy like a Jimmy Butler in there just for defense. I mean, that's a guy I think of one more defensive guy. I think one more wing defender in my mind is what I sort of see. And Clay, you know, is okay. But I don't know if Clay's skills are kind of redundant at this point.
Yeah. Do we feel like Drummond is a liability in some respects in international play, or is he such a beast that he works well there?
Well, Rick Barry is the assistant coach on this team, so we're fine. Right? I don't know. He didn't say that, but I'll assume that was implied.
Yeah, we should get DeAndre on there too if that's the case.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the only question for me. I mean, Carmelo, you know, he's proven his bona fides international play before, and is just such an effective, you know, off ball threat, and you know, and is still, you know, seemingly effective enough at this point in his career where I wouldn't expect that to be. I would expect him to still be merit a place on this list and be effective in that role still. So I think I would lean toward him being there. Cousins is, you know, is obviously such a beast that, you know, you'd want him there too. Plus, he can shoot a little bit, and he can, you know, he has so much versatility and can do so many things that, I don't worry about him, you know, him fitting. I guess you kind of always worry about him fitting in with the team a little bit, but he's done well international play before, so I think he definitely merits being on there. I do think that Clay, actually, his defense is pretty good. I think he can wing defend, but I think maybe Butler might be a better choice. I don't know. It's a little bit tough.
Yeah, I think Drummond's the good point, and his note on this was if he was picking just like a straight 2016 team to like go to the 2016 Olympics, he would have Paul George instead of Andre Drummond. Yeah,
that's good.
I didn't even think about Paul George. Wow. Yeah.
I know. Yeah, it's a loaded group. But he said Drummond, if it was strictly against the 92 team, he said he felt like he just needed a little bit more size than that. And he already had wings. So yeah, that was kind of the thinking there. But yeah, I mean, you're leaving off Paul George, Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving. I mean, just great. Like John Wall.
Can I have some of those? Can I have some of those from my 80s team? Can you give me Paul George? I'm going to take Paul George. So Paul George is now on the 80s team. So.
Yeah, it's a loaded crop. So it was a tough thing, I think, for him to narrow down. He said he really kind of struggled with those last few picks. But and even like just random role players, like, yeah, like even like Andre Iguodala, who played on the 2012 team, he was like, I mean, they deserve at least a chance. Like, but he's like, look at the talent I'm leaving off. There's no way I can put him ahead. So yeah, Draymond for me as well is one. I think I would go Draymond instead of Drummond. and somehow still leave Paul George off, which sounds crazy, but that's kind of where I would go. Just the versatility of Draymond is incredible. So yeah. Watching him and Charles Barkley go at it would be awesome.
You know, I might consider Paul George over Carmelo just because I, you know, Carmelo isn't going to do much for you defensively, and George obviously will. You're obviously going to need wing defense. And then, yeah, Clay or Butler. I mean, I think their talents are fairly close. The nice thing about Clay is, you know, he's a better 3-point shooter. Gonna give you a little more spacing. It can obviously has a lot of experience playing off of Curry. And I guess if you have Draymond on the team as well, I don't know if you want three Warriors, although, you know, they're 33-2 or whatever. As a recording,
I'll just take the Warriors. So, I just have the whole team.
Yeah, exactly. So. You can. I feel like we can justify that fairly well. But I, you know, Braden's thought process in putting this team together, and especially in trying to match up with the 92 team, I do think makes a lot of sense. So
yeah, he's got the tough task of like you said, Adam. He's got too many talented guys. Like oh man, I can't add like Paul Jordan.
Yeah.
Oh, what do I do with Kyrie? Like,
and
it's
you
good,
know,
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah. In fairness, 92. There are definitely talented players who were left on the team who would have been awesome too. Yeah. I mean, honestly, Leitner, you know, does not have a talent of those other guys. I mean,
but he's white though. Forgetting.
Well, they had to get the token in there, the token college player. They could have picked Shaq, but yeah,
Shaq would have so much.
Yeah, I don't know, why didn't they pick Shaq? I wonder what is the difference between Shaquille O'Neal and Christian Leitner. I just cannot put my finger on it.
In some fairness, I mean, Leitner was an incredibly accomplished college player, so but yes, historically it does not look like the best choice. I do think that, I don't even have any idea how the 2016 team would do. I mean, I think they have a really good shot, especially playing under 2016 rules. I mean, I just think, you know, obviously the shooting is going to be better. There's a lot better perimeter shooters for 2016. I mean, even in the point guard play, I mean, you know, obviously you've Stockton and Magic, who are among the best point guards ever, but I feel like... I just feel like Curry and Westbrook and Paul have a good chance of running them off the floor. So, I mean, Stockton would compete defensively, and obviously Magic was even at 32 was still. I mean, he's gonna have a tough time keeping up with any of those guys defensively, or really any of the guards defensively. But certainly he can. He can do a lot of things. So.
Yeah, no question. And I think the last kind of the point I'll make up for Braden, I know Carmelo for him too was a tough thing. He's like, I think Paul George is better than Carmelo right now, but how well Carmelo's played for USA and the fact that he's like going to come out here for a fourth Olympics and the commitment he's put in, he's like, I just feel like he deserves that last spot. So that was his thinking there on Carmelo. And I think I agree with him on that.
Yeah.
And Paul George would be cool to reward for actually coming back to Team USA after the horrific injury in 2014. But, you know, that's kind of another story.
Sure. All right. Adam, any final thoughts on this project? I know you've got some other, Olympic related coverage that you're planning at Basketball Pantheon.
Yeah, definitely. We might do some stuff kind of in between after this is posted, kind of talk about the teams in between our 12 years. So maybe talk about like the 64 team, or I'm sorry, the 72 team and the 76 team, you know, between that years and then maybe the 84, 88, kind of fixing those teams. And, you know, just different things leading up to the Olympics. I think that's a thing that's not covered that well in the basketball community, which is amazing because there's so much basketball content out there. But that's kind of a little angle we want to take and kind of talk more about international teams and maybe even talk about teams, you know, non-USA teams that were great that didn't get their due, maybe just because they didn't have a ton of NBA players. We want to do something on like the 04 Argentina team that actually knocked off USA and ended up winning the gold, which was just a great, great team. And maybe kind of compile some video clips of that team and just to show that, you know, it's not just America that's good at basketball. So that's kind of a direction we want to go, you know, here in 2016 moving forward, and just a lot more content from us. You know, we're a new site, we're, you know, 9 months old, so we really wanted to figure out a direction now that we've kind of like tried different things and, you know, feel like we know what we want to do, and, you know, hopefully look for a lot more content from us in 2016.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, always enjoy the stuff that you're putting out there, and appreciate you coming on the show again. And if you want to go to your website and follow you on Twitter, let everyone know all the places that they can find you.
So, yeah, the website's simply just basketballpantheon.com. My personal, we have a, you know, Twitter, just B-Ball Pantheon, Instagram, B-Ball Pantheon, different things like that. And then my personal one is at slapping five. So like slapping, but no G, and then just a numerical five is my personal Twitter account. So yeah, talk about basketball on there, just different kinds of things. And, yeah, that's where you can follow us. And Braden, of course, you guys can get his Twitter handle from the site itself. It's kind of a complicated one, so I'm not going to butcher it here. But yeah, so Braden Neubauer is my kind of partner, and he writes some stuff. We're both from San Antonio, so he writes some stuff for Pounding the Rock, the Spurs blog. So, yeah, you can look for his stuff on there too. So it's fun stuff. We both are obsessed with basketball, so it's a fun project for us to do.
Cool, cool. Rich, anything else before we go?
No, I think that's it for me.
All right. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for checking us out. You can find us at harborparoxysm.com. We are part of the HB network of podcasts. You can subscribe both to the Harbor Paroxysm podcast feed and the Over and Back feed on iTunes. We would appreciate a rating and or review if you were be great enough to provide us with one. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. And yeah, that's about it. Thanks everyone for checking us out. Until next time, thanks for listening. We'll be back again soon.